Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. Right now, we're going to welcome back to the studio Dr. Cal Beissner, and he is with the Cornwall Alliance, and he's going to talk about an open letter supporting Scott Pruitt for EPA Administrator. This is a Trump nominee and certainly controversial among those dealing with the environment. Cal Beissner, welcome so much back to the program. It's great to have you on again.
Thanks, Jerry. I always enjoy coming on the show with you, and I just appreciate the friendship that the Lord has given us through the years.
Oh, thank you. And I appreciate your scholarship, too. And now you've put together a coalition of several different people that are evangelical, mainline Protestant, Roman Catholic, and Jewish. These are scientists, economists, legal scholars, policy experts, and religious leaders in support of Scott Pruitt. First of all, why don't you set the table for us? Tell us a little bit about Scott Pruitt's background and why is there any controversy?
Yeah, okay. Well, the first thing that probably most of your listeners will be most interested to know is simply that Scott Pruitt is a solid evangelical Christian. He's a Southern Baptist and just has an outstanding reputation among Southern Baptist leaders. As a matter of fact, when one... one sort of left-leaning group of evangelicals presented opposition to Pruitt. A whole group of Southern Baptist leaders responded with an outstanding endorsement of him instead and defended his reputation. Pruitt is the Attorney General for the state of Oklahoma right now. And, of course, that means he's responsible for ensuring the enforcement of laws within the state of Oklahoma on individuals and on corporations alike, as well as on government officials. And one of the more prominent areas in which he has worked is the enforcement of environmental laws there. And some folks have thought that he would be in the pocket of big oil or something like that, since oil is an important industry in Oklahoma. But as a matter of fact, Pruitt has successfully sued various oil companies to ensure that they comply with federal and state environmental protection laws. But at any rate, Pruitt has been nominated by President-elect Trump to be the new administrator for the EPA. And I think he has a lot of really outstanding qualifications for the position. And that's why when a variety of different environmental organizations opposed him, I thought it would be a good idea to provide a counterpoint to what they were saying.
All right. Before we go into more specifics, let me ask you a question that I've been troubled by, and I just need clarification. There have been more earthquakes, as I understand it, in Oklahoma. There's also been a rise of fracking. Some people would probably say, oh, look, that's related to that. But I don't know. What are your comments on that? What's the deal with the earthquakes in Oklahoma?
Well, frankly, I don't know either. And I don't think at this point anybody knows for sure. Partly, we may actually be seeing the result of improvement in detection technologies that allows us to detect smaller tremors than we did before. But partly there does seem to be actually an increase in the frequency of those very small tremors compared with what had been the case before. Whether that is related to fracking is at this point still an unanswered question. There are studies that point both directions, yay and nay, on that. Now, one thing that I would point out, and this comes from my own background, having lived and grown up in Southern California, and having taken a course in geology at a college there, where obviously in Southern Cal, you always think about earthquakes. That's a very important thing there.
Sure.
And one of the things that was pointed out in this geology course when we talked about earthquakes is that the really dangerous earthquakes happen in places that don't have them very frequently. They happen especially when it's been a long, long time since the last major quake. And that's because the danger of a quake depends on the amount of force involved in the movement of the earth. And that, in turn, depends in part on how long a given stress has been growing before it gets released. In the more solid earth parts of Southern California, earthquake tremors tend to be more dangerous. But where I lived, down in Orange County, the land is much more porous, and therefore you get a whole lot of very, very minor tremors instead of a whole, instead of any big ones. Well, I would think that that would tend to lead toward the idea that if the tiny, tiny quakes that are being blamed, rightly or wrongly, on fracking are in fact increasing in their frequency because of fracking, that could actually prevent more major quakes by relieving stress at lower levels rather than waiting till it increases to a level big enough to cause a major quake.
Yeah, that's interesting. We never do hear about, you know, some sort of catastrophic earthquake out of Oklahoma. We just hear about these little things. Okay, how about a comment about Obama and the EPA? Because I think, in a sense, what the Trump administration is going to try and do is correct some of the errors or some of the extreme positions to which Obama has gone, which have really been very deleterious to the economy. And to my knowledge, not that helpful to the environment, per se.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Essentially, what we need to go back to is the failure of Congress to pass any kind of greenhouse gas emission reduction legislation. In 2009, the House of Representatives passed the Waxman-Markey carbon dioxide reduction bill, a cap-and-trade bill on CO2 emissions, but the Senate refused even to bring it to a vote, and so the whole issue died in Congress. Well, President Obama has frequently taken the attitude, well, if Congress won't act, I will. And so he did on this, and he had leadership in the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, that agreed with his attitude about this, and they decided, if we can't get cap and trade through Congress, if we can't get CO2 emission reductions by congressional statutory enactment, then we'll do it through regulatory action instead. And so they launched a variety of different pieces of regulation designed to essentially to diminish and eventually eliminate the use of coal for generating electricity. And among these were a cross-state air pollution rule and a mercury and air toxins rule, and then finally the so-called clean power plan. And the first two of those have already been struck down by the courts. The third is in a stay by an appeals court, and it's likely to reach the Supreme Court and be struck down as well. But the idea has been, okay, we can't get Congress to pass legislation, so we'll force reductions in emissions by attacking coal and then eventually later natural gas through other avenues. And what that has meant is that the EPA has been essentially creating law rather than implementing law created by Congress. And the latter is what it's supposed to do constitutionally. Right. The former is actually a usurpation of the legislative function, and it's contrary to the Constitution, which is why the courts have struck down those first two pieces that I mentioned.
Right, and the EPA, of course, then would be an arm of the executive branch of the government.
Right.
But it sounds like, I mean, initially, especially in the first part of your answer, it almost sounded like you're blaming Congress, not the president, as in President Obama, for acting out of Constitution. You're blaming Congress for not passing it. I know you personally would not agree with the cap and trade type bill, right?
Probably poor word choice on my part. I said that Congress failed to pass cap and trade legislation and also carbon tax. Maybe the better point would simply be Congress refused to pass cap and trade or carbon tax, and Obama didn't like that. He considered it a failure. I consider it a success because, in fact, there is no good reason to restrict CO2 emissions. CO2 is not a pollutant. It's an odorless, colorless, non-toxic gas, absolutely essential to life. The more of it there is in the air, the better plants grow, and therefore the more food there is for everything that eats plants or, say, eats something that eats plants. So that's all good stuff, and its warming effect in the atmosphere is very, very minimal. It's real, but it's minimal and certainly not dangerous and not the kind of thing that you want to spend trillions of dollars trying to reduce.
And I know we've mentioned this in previous programs, but what you're saying isn't necessarily going against 97% of all the scientists out there.
Oh, no, certainly not. I mean, Obama is fond of saying, and various other people as well, that there is this 97 or even 98% consensus among scientists, or especially climate scientists, that global warming is real, that it's primarily man-made, and that it's dangerous enough to justify our spending trillions of dollars trying to reduce it. No, there is no such consensus whatsoever. There is a consensus that adding CO2 to the atmosphere should make the atmosphere a little warmer than it otherwise would be. From that point on, there is no consensus at all. There are estimates all over the park from 0 to 5 or 6 degrees as far as how much warming it would come if we were to double the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. There are plenty of scientists who are predicting instead that because of a quieter period in the sun, that is, less energy coming from it and less solar magnetic wind coming from it, we could actually be entering a cool period that would be far more dangerous than any warming. So those things are debated among scientists. Those things are recognized as uncertainties even by the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
Okay, very good. Now, your article about your open letter about Scott Pruitt, who is under consideration, been nominated to head the EPA. You close with this, and I want to go ahead and read a couple of these things and have you comment on this. Some radical environmentalists and religious activists oppose Mr. Pruitt because he does not embrace their exaggerated fears of human-induced global warming, fears that go well beyond the empirical evidence crucial to genuine science, or their antipathy to the development of the abundant, reliable, affordable energy indispensable to lifting and keeping whole societies out of poverty and the disease and the premature death that invariably accompany it. Go ahead and add anything you want to that particular statement.
The deal is this. The primary basis on which radical environmentalists, including some who call themselves evangelicals, oppose Scott Pruitt is that he doesn't buy into the notion of dangerous man-made global warming, dangerous enough to justify spending trillions of dollars to try to reduce it. On that basis, they call him a climate denier, a science denier, all sorts of things. Now, the fact is, he's never denied human influence on climate change, and in fact, he affirmed it in the one and only article in which he ever discussed it, an article in National Review last May. He simply points out that scientists are still disagreed over the degree and extent of warming that comes from adding CO2 to the atmosphere. Now, Pruitt also is important in that as Attorney General, he actually led a group of other state attorneys general in opposing another group that called itself Attorneys General for Climate. Now I've forgotten.
I kind of vaguely remember that. It was a group of attorney generals, and they were going to, it was like, okay, if our governors won't act, we're going to act, or something.
This started in the fall, late 2015. A group of attorneys general came out, along with Al Gore, and said, look, we want to investigate and possibly prosecute corporations and individuals and think tanks that are standing against the idea of dangerous man-made global warming, possibly
punish them
with criminal punishment.
Yeah, I remember that story. And so Scott Pruitt led the way against that.
That's right. A larger group of attorneys general who actually rebuked these other attorneys general for doing that and pointed out that what they were doing is contrary to the First Amendment's guarantee of free speech, and it is in fact a federal crime. It's a federal crime to intimidate, threaten, or otherwise prevent someone from exercising his rights under the Constitution of the United States. And as a response, most of those attorneys general who participated in the first group backed off. And eventually, pretty much all of them have backed off. So Pruitt has been a defender of the right to free speech, the importance of of constitutional federalism, recognizing the difference between the Congress, which makes laws, and the federal executive, which is only supposed to implement laws. And so he wants to rein in the EPA in that way. He's an intelligent man. He understands the arguments pro and con on all sorts of things like this. And one last thing. The EPA, for the last almost two decades, has operated on an assumption that its job is to drive pollution levels down as far as possible, regardless of cost. Scott Pruitt recognizes instead that every policy ought to be justified on a cost-benefit basis. If a policy costs more than the benefits it delivers, then it doesn't make sense to adopt that policy. That would be a very, very fresh breath of air at the EPA.
All right, Cal Beissner with Cornwall Alliance, cornwallalliance.org. Thank you so much for sharing with us about the open letter supporting Scott Pruitt for EPA Administrator. Cal, always
Thank
a pleasure.
You, Jerry.
Thank you now.
Thank
God
you,
bless.
Jerry. And your listeners really would do well to contact their senators and let them know their own thinking about this. Pruitt's confirmation hearing is scheduled next Wednesday before the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. And he needs the support of listeners from around the country.
Okay, thank you, Cal. God bless. All right,
thank
bye-bye.
You.